for a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all grapple with in this conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. Happy Healthy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Healthy Tuesday, Rachel. Another new voice behind the microphone today. It's nice to see you.
Good to see you, too. What's on your mind today?
Well, I, as always, have floated around different places over the last couple weeks. Last week was, we had Mental Health Awareness Day. And so I was kind of looking through a lot of my colleagues' posts and looking at a lot of posts from my students and a lot of people talking about, which has been kind of our ongoing theme for the last 6 weeks, which is a lot of people are suffering with their mental health in numbers that we haven't seen in the past, that people who generally would say that they're pretty stable, didn't really feel depressed or really experience anxiety, are now starting to look around and say, I'm in trouble and I need help. And where can I get that help? And so over the last 6 weeks, we've been talking about how to access a good therapist and where to go for help and how important it is to recognize that you're not sick. If you're struggling with anxiety and depression, especially right now, you are responding in a normal way or an abnormal way to an abnormal situation. That the things we are experiencing in the world are so magnified right now that anyone who has any sentient experience, who is connected to the world, who understands their feelings, is feeling rattled. And so I've been trying to really stay focused on how can I keep encouraging you to seek out help when you need it, or even if you don't think you need it, but to be proactive and look for a therapist so that you've made a connection with someone, that you've made that relationship, so that if you do find yourself really needing support, you've already have someone that you can go to. That's so important. It's like having a pediatrician or an OBGYN. You want to find them before you need them. We've been talking about normalizing the feelings of anxiety and depression that we have in the world right now. And also, we spent part of the summer talking about the issues of race and diversity and access to mental health care for those who find themselves the marginalized populations in our country. And so all of this came together in one evening, which I guess we all tend to do. I was, you know, messing around, looking at different websites, and I came upon this website for Ayana Therapy. And it caught my eye because I was trying to educate myself more on the inequities in counseling, in the mental health profession, and how do people, BIPOC individuals or, you know, marginalized populations, find mental health care? Because I talk a lot about the importance of finding good mental health care, but it became very apparent that finding good mental health care is one more piece of the privilege puzzle, that good mental health care right now seems to be focused on serving those who are white, middle to upper class, have access to insurance, and the mental health care that most clinicians have been trained to offer comes from a very Western perspective of what good mental health looks like. And it's all predicated on our DSM, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, which is the Bible of mental health, which is supposed to determine who is normal and who is abnormal. And when you look through the DSM-5, and we've talked about it on the air a few times, it is very focused on what is normal is being white, middle class, upper middle class, and male. That the diagnoses very much are biased against anyone who doesn't fit into that category. And so we find in the mental health profession that people with lower socioeconomic status, women, people of color, people of intersectional identities, LGBTQ community, find themselves more often than not landing under DSM diagnoses that other people, white, middle, and upper class men, would not find themselves under. So while I was kind of trying to figure out how did we get so imbalanced, I came upon Ayana, which is an online mental health therapy platform specifically designed for marginalized and intersectional communities. And this app matches users with licensed professionals that share their unique traits and values and sensibilities with potential clients. And so I just popped in a contact message to the general Ayana information. And immediately, I think within an hour, I got an email back from Eric Coley, who is the founder and CEO of Ayana. And he was so generous. And I said, would you ever be interested in coming to my show and talking about what you do? And he said, sure. He said, but we should probably chat first. And I said, okay. And so we set up a Zoom call and we ended up talking, I think it was close to 2 hours. It was just, we went everywhere through our whole lives and our histories and our backgrounds. And the connection was so instantaneous. And I said, can you still come on my show? Because now we've told so much of our story, would there be anything new to share? But he agreed, because Ayana is setting a new standard in the world of mental health. Even before the app was actually launched officially, it was earning recognition and prizes and awards. And Eric was being called forward to talk about how he came up with this app to bring together those who tend to be marginalized and outside of the mainstream mental health profession with professional mental health professionals that look more like them, that mirror their experiences more. And the reason this is important is because in our current mental health care system, 86% of providers are white, identify as white. And that means there are very few clinicians that identify outside of the mainstream who are available to offer counseling to those that mirror their experiences. Now, when I went through my training program 27 years ago, the common thought at that time was that it didn't matter what your race, religion, background, ethnicity, gender was. If you had the tools to be a counselor, you could sit with anyone and provide for them the kind of healing that they would need. So that was kind of the standard of care. Now, things have changed quite a bit, but not as much as you would think, because current training, although it's still it has now started to include a dimension of cultural competency or diversity training to help counselors to broaden their understanding of their different clients. The amount of people of color coming through graduate programs has not risen as much as you would think. And the cultural competency training, although it is more prevalent in current models of graduate programs, the amount of clinicians that have been practicing for 20 plus years haven't had the same cultural competency training. So again, this can you know, never come up as an issue for a lot of counselors. It might never come up for an issue for someone seeking counseling. But for those who would feel more comfortable working with someone with a similar background, accessing that care can be challenging. So when clinicians lack the needed skills and the knowledge to effectively interact with those who are ethno-racially different or clients of color, they may be left feeling misunderstood, invalidated, or sometimes even traumatized. And this reality has come to the forefront more so than ever in the last 6 months. So it's the perfect time to have Eric Coley on the show to talk about his journey from regular citizen to founder and CEO of Ayana. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And although we won't be taking calls on the air, you can call in with a comment or question to 805-549-8855. And Claire will happily get the questions up to Rachel, who will share them. So if you do have a comment or concern or question, please give us a call, 805-549-8855. You can also send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Follow me on my Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, or follow us on Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT. My girls keep that site going, and you can send messages to me there or just see what's coming up week after week. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org or podcast or show to listen at your convenience. Anywhere you find podcasts, just search for A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. So we are here to talk about mental health. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll be back to start our conversation.
Help me. It's like the walls are caving in. Sometimes I feel like giving up, but I just can't. It isn't in my blood. Laying on the bathroom floor, feeling nothing. I'm overwhelmed and insecure. Give me something I could take to ease my mind slowly. Just have a drink and you'll feel better. Just take her home and you'll feel better. Keep telling me that it gets better. Does it ever? Help me. It's like the walls are caving in. Sometimes I feel like giving up. No medicine is strong enough. Someone help me. I'm crawling in my skin. Sometimes I feel like giving up.
But I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And welcome to my guest, Eric Coley. It's nice to see you.
Thank you. You as well.
So we have had a very long conversation, but we didn't really go into depth in our personal call about your journey to starting Ayana. And so I know that you didn't wake up one day and say, hey, let's put together a mental health app. I would imagine that you had a couple careers prior to this new platform. So let's start off a little bit with your history and how you came to be Eric Coley.
Sure. So I am from Senegal originally, West Africa. Moved here to go to college a while ago and majored in finance and got out of that and did investment banking and did some finance work for about 10 years. I was a bit disillusioned, but didn't have the courage to quit, but knew that there was more to me than what world that I had been a part of. Next was a career in fashion, which is a hard left.
And yes.
The backdrop there is that my mom, I dressed my mom when I was a kid for years, I think from the age of 10 till about maybe 16. She was in me, but immigrants that moved to the States saying they do fashion in school. It's just not part of the storyline. So, but when I got the courage to dive into it, I knew that alone, fashion alone wouldn't be enough. And so I looked for a way to complement it, and it was education for young girls. My grandmother went to college in the 20s in Africa. So there was a lineage that was created where women's empowerment mattered a lot. So I figured, well, how about I mix fashion in a way to fund schooling for young girls in Africa? And that was called Le Dessin for 6 years. And most recently, Ayana, its premise was because one of my best friends, Celeste, who's an African-American woman in LA, couldn't find a counselor. And I, being a bit of a fixer, I said, well, let me see if I can help you out. I must say this too. There's a bit of privilege in the story in that I jokingly said, well, my therapist is a Jewish woman from West LA. And she said, oh, great. I said, but I want a black woman. And, you know, to me, life is about learning. And though we had known each other for a while, what she meant was, am I going to be seen unless I have a black woman? That's actually what triggered my response. I said, well, wouldn't it be great if there was an app that you can go on? It would read you, read your profile, type into your cultural nuances, get you a match. She said, yes. I said, well, let me call you back. And I literally hung up, and I've read about 12,000 pages of research over the course of 3 months, learning, assessing, dissecting. And sounds crazy, but never doubted we'd be here. But we are here. Of course, I'm skipping and bypassing the ups and downs, but that's the story.
Well, I'm not going to let you skip them and bypass them. I liked your brief overview, but there's so many curiosities. One, what made you want to come to the United States to study finance in the beginning? What motivated that first move?
Sure. So Senegal is French colonized, And generally, if you are able to, you go overseas to school. But because we are a French-speaking country, people go to France or Belgium or Montreal in Quebec, right? I didn't want to go to France. I fought against that. And I tend to be quite hard-headed. So it took me a year of saying, I'm not going to go to school then unless I go to the States. And why did I pick the States? Because there's a notion of colonialism that describes the narrative between which, in which a person like me speaks to a French person. Think of it as a Spaniard and a Mexican. There's an evident classism, notion of classism that's inherent into the story, where you have to prove yourself. And I didn't want to have to do, it's just mentally too exhausting.
Like if you were to go to school in France, there would be some kind of class difference because you're from Senegal. You wouldn't feel as accepted because you're not naturally from France. Was that,
well,
was already biased?
And so think of this this way. Indians want to be British. Africans want to be the British or French. Mexicans want to be Spaniards. It's that deeply embedded sense of self-loathing. You don't like your culture. You'd rather adopt the culture of the people that literally decimated your own culture. Mm-hmm. There's a love and hate rapport where I'm going in to be a student. Next to me, I know people from Senegal that are selling artifacts on the street that are literally poor, but whose dreams is to come to the States, right? To France. I was privileged enough to be able to go, I'm going to go to a good school and be whatever I want to be, but I'm still this Senegalese guy. And the US didn't know me the way the French thought it knew me. So it was a clean slate. Mm-hmm. Coming here, and the US is known, unlike Europe, for rewarding talent more than any other place is able to or has wanted to. And so I'm seen differently. I have better chances of, quote unquote, achieving a certain kind of goal that I have in mind. Yeah.
And so finance was going to be your avenue to wealth and celebrity, or was it just, were you just good at math? Why that?
So my parents were well-educated. My mom went to school in pharmacy in France, actually. My mom and dad went to school in France and also got married there. My mom actually eloped, which is not a story, and met my dad in Paris. And my father was an attorney. So when we came back, when they came back to Senegal, the aspirations are, they have to be at least where we are or more. And so hence the notion of the trifecta. You can either be a banker, an attorney, or a doctor. Pick one, blindly. We'll follow your path. And because I grew up around people that were bankers or more than attorneys, I think, I picked. There was no rhyme or reason. Now that I think about this, well, I know I didn't pick medicine because it's a hard route. And so why the U.S. also? I was in Ohio because the deal was, well, Eric, if you want to go to France, the only way that you go to the States is if you go to Ohio, where my dad's brother was in med school. It was a safer route for my parents. So I went to Ohio in North France, which to me was a great deal and still is. So finance, and I mean, egotistically, of course, and financially, it offers you a world that most of us don't have access to. And so the mindset that I had then, and I don't want to demean the space, the Eric and I shouldn't talk bad about finance, but the old Eric thought it was it. Though it was punctuated with doubts, the doubts only grew larger towards the end of my career. So that's where I picked finance.
And so when you made the switch from finance and decided that now your love was fashion because you had loved it as a kid, two questions. How angry were your parents? And number two, What were your hopes with the fashion work? What was your kind of goal in that route?
So I went to UCLA to get an MBA towards the end of that career. And it is, and so I had faced depression, anxiety that was unaddressed while I was in finance. It got worse towards the end of my career. When I applied and I get into UCLA, it got even worse. So those were signals that I think I had tried to ignore. And my mom passed away while I was in finance. My goal was to, do finance, be rich, and take care of her. That was the goal. But she died before I got there. So her permission, I did not seek, but I knew I would have gotten, because my very purpose was to recreate women like her and to recreate her mom, who had 9 kids and went to college. No one in Africa, no one does that. And what it turned her into, being a successful business owner whose daughters, my sisters, are a bit atypical when you look at African women overall. Who, my little sister is the head of a division for Save the Children in Congo. And that would have happened if my grandma hadn't said, let's do this, let's go to college. So the point was going to fashion, but honor people around the mission, which was, I'll tell you about the premise. We got young girls to design and sketch a piece of art, which we then embroidered on fashion that we made. We would sell it and give them a quarter of the proceeds to be in school full time. Undoing the notion that giving, giving, giving is as empowering for you to succeed as a young girl. We are seeing the result of your work on a garment that someone wears in LA or New York that triggers something in you. It says, oh, I'm not how I have been defined by my community. If it happens to be a very conservative, you know, anti-woman community, it undoes, it totally makes you rethink and build your own narrative. So to me, that was the premise. Success in that vein would have meant we're selling all over the world, which means that the more we sell, the more girls are educated. And we know this for a fact. The World Bank, the IMF, the WHO, the way to get poor countries, and I put in quotations, out of poverty is to educate women. It's the way out, and it's not done. And so that's what I was hoping to achieve.
If you're just tuning in, my guest today is Eric Coley. He is the founder and CEO of Ayana, a mental health, online mental health therapy app for marginalized and intersectional communities. This app that Eric designed matches users with licensed professionals that share their unique traits, values, and sensibilities. And clearly, from this part of your story, you had a heart for helping others before you even thought about Ayana. Like, clearly with your fashion business, the fashion was just a mechanism clearly to advance and empower young women, and in honor of your mom. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And so, Eric, let's continue with this. What was the shift then? Because you're doing Ayana, but does the La Dessin, is it still exist?
So Le Dessin, so no, it doesn't. And so, you know, I mean, when you pursue your passion, you have to be okay with being broke or poor, however you want to define it, which hopefully you hope, you think and wish that it's going to help your business succeed. So after having spent 6 years in fashion and we hadn't yet succeeded, it's hard. And again, I had no business doing this, haven't been to school for fashion, just impulsive, raw passion for what I think can be achieved. So when I said to Celeste that I was going to look into it, For a week, I was on my couch because I had to mourn the possibility of letting Lodi Sen go. Mm-hmm. Because I knew I couldn't do the two together. And so, though it took me a year to mourn finance, to get into fashion, it became easier. It took me a week to go, is this really your lane? And the raw need and want to be of service came in quite handy, which wasn't covered by the fashion experience, right? Now it became, well, all right, so you have all this energy and passion. You know your friend is having a hard time doing this. You have also experienced issues of depression. Get to reading and see. Let's see what comes out of that. But the more I got into it, the more the passion got propelled because it became it morphed into a self-healing nature where I became more courageous about discussing what I had been through with people. And so the more time I spent on studying the space and getting what I should be a part of it, the better I understood myself and how my being more vocal about who I am or what I had been through would help people around me.
Well, what you're alluding to, because you mentioned briefly that you had struggled with some anxiety and depression at periods of time through your finance career. And then that just got exacerbated as you went into the MBA program. And quite often our mental health symptoms are our psyche screaming at us, you're going the wrong direction. So it sounds like that anxiety and depression was this constant message, Eric, wrong direction. And so you were in ways responding to it because you were debilitated by the anxiety and depression. But at the same time, the closer you kept moving towards your right work, you were healing. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah. So your first lane is not necessarily your own lane, but it helps you get to your own lane. My first lane was fashion, where when I got into it, I swore that I would never do something that I don't believe in. And that was my old life. Now, that first lane being in fashion enabled me to go into mental health. I couldn't have skipped. I don't know that I would have been the same. Mm-hmm. So there is a positive correlation between your sufferings and your commitment to a goal. Almost one for one, I'm being. but
no one's going to want to suffer or go after their goal if you say that. But I hear it.
But it's also even a lot more nuanced. Enough that you have to have been willing to face the pain that you were a part of, in order to properly affect what you are going after. You cannot. I call it paying your dues, if you will. You have to have felt certain things to survive the ills and the headache of being an entrepreneur. And for me, having not dealt with my issues of depression and anxiety, it got so bad that I faced circumstances that most human beings, I say, when you fight so hard to ascend to level, to a certain strata, social strata, you hang on to it, or you want to go above that. That's just how we are wired. Mm-hmm. But the answers to me lie in what you are running away from. And so the strata's below that. And my circumstances made me face that. Well, I mean, you know, I hit rock bottom a couple of times. I call it hitting soft bottom because I keep on bouncing.
You'd hit the bottom and come back a little bit. But what you're saying, though, is in some ways, everything you were trying to achieve was running away or trying to run away from the anxiety, depression that was always there, and that you weren't going to be able to really be of service until you addressed those things you were running away from. Is that
hearing? Yeah. Oh, in tandem, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that I'm ever going to be fully, quote unquote, healed. And no. I don't know that. And I've had this talk with a friend of mine. I said, who's been through what I've been through? I said, would you ever change anything? And she said, I don't know. She goes, how about you? I said, not a thing. And I've been through hell. But not a thing would I ever change. I feel privileged to have been given the chance to go through this. It opened me up. It makes things so much easier in terms of deciding your value systems, in terms of your honesty, integrity, and cultural humility vis-a-vis what you do. So I know we are going in circles, as we do a lot. So forgive me, audience. Blame me for this, by the way.
I enjoy the journey. I'm with you.
Okay. So, Ayana was built initially because of Celeste's needs, but empowered by a combination of my wanting to fight for people who had had my own story, but who had been neglected. See, look, I mean, this is something that doesn't get mentioned enough. Although I'm a black male, I'm highly privileged because I wasn't born and raised in the States. I haven't faced nearly the amount of trauma that they have faced, but I've been around it. I've been exposed to it enough to go, wait, I'm lucky. I'm not a, you know, I was born and I didn't go to Stanford, lucky, right? But I have a strong foundation from overseas that was given to me. But I have the privilege to walk into a room of people that are so neglected. I walked in for 3, 4, 5 years. I'm now walking out and I'm like, I'm going to fight for you guys because I've seen your story. So it's a weird world where this is Africa, this is the States, I'm the black male, this is the world that I did ins and outs of. And before you speak to me, you go, oh, he's a black guy. You speak to me, you go, oh, you have an accent, where are you from? I become less threatening. But I walked into a room that where when I was there, I was told, oh, he's not the same as us. And I'm like, no, we are the same. So I'm like, okay, my commitment to you now is going to be, how do you get seen? How do you get honored? How do we not do what we do, which is we go around you whenever we see you coming? And I'm talking about homeless people here. That sounds a bit cryptic to some, but I'm talking about people who've been forgotten by the system. So what's interesting is the more I discuss this with you, the more I realize that there's a few more epiphanies.
Yeah. And the epiphanies are what make the story so much fun to unfold. Eric Coley is my guest today. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and you're listening to a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm so into the conversation, I forgot who I am. We are talking about mental health. We're talking about the journey that Eric has been on, from finance to starting a fashion company to finding his way into service, and all with the dance of mental health care involved. So if you're curious, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back to continue our conversation. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Some days things just take way too much of my energy. I look up and the whole room's spinning. You take my cares away. I can so overcomplicate. People tell me to medicate. Feel my blood running. Swear the sky's falling. I don't know if this shit's fabricated. Time goes by and I can't control my mind. Don't know enough to try, but you tell me every time. Just keep. Breathe.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and you're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. My guest today is Eric Coley. He is the founder and CEO of Ayana, which is an online mental health therapy app for marginalized and intersectional communities. This app works to match users with licensed professionals that share their unique traits, values, and sensibilities. And as I opened the show today, I talked about how in our current mental health care system, we really lack in our training good cultural competency and the tools with which to really work with a diverse population. And that is something that we've tried to correct, is being corrected slowly as we move into the 21st century. But for a lot of people who have gone in for counseling or therapy and have not received the kind of care that is helpful to them and in some ways traumatize them, this app, this product of Ayana that Eric has created is more timely than ever, because while we are in our break, Eric, I got a reminder from my friend Bill that when I was talking about the marginalized communities and intersectionality of people in marginalized communities, I did not talk about those who are disabled or differently abled bodies and receiving care. So let's talk about the vision of Ayana and how broad your reach is.
Sure. So,
and thank you, Bill.
So, Ayana is about impact, and I'm going to refer to the notion of privilege and degradation of needs. When you think of it as the bell curve. When we look for counselors, we look for the hardest possible counselors to find, and it's because we refer to the user, the patient that has had the most difficult moment looking for a counselor. And I'm going to give you an example. Assume that there's someone who's queer, biracial, Asian, and disabled. I'm a straight black male. Though we are both minorities in this country, it won't take me nearly as long to find one as it would take them to find one. When we look for counselors within Ayana, we start there. That's the standard. That's the bar. We look for people that can help you out, and then I come number two, three, four, or five, if need be. What we haven't done a good job of is marketing that on the website, online. We have been talking and advocating with associations that are going to make available to us such particular types of counselors that can help those people. So it's not that it's not being worked on, it's just that it hasn't been discussed or shared as much as we should. Mm-hmm. But rest assured that it's something that stays on top of our pile of problems to tackle. You cannot claim to be for people that are marginalized and literally do what's been done to them for years. And I also add the following. We are walking into a space with a rather big ask. We're saying to them, hey, give us a chance to treat what we know to be unhealed wounds. And we're asking them, well, trust us, we are unlike the others. It's a big ask. Mm-hmm. Is the notion of self-fulfilling prophecy where they would hope that you would fail them to justify and fortify the belief that that's how life is for them. To undo that, we got to garner trust. Trust is so easy to wait for someone like that. That's why we proceed so cautiously and we make mistakes. We are doing something that's never been done ever, ever in the world. As many mistakes as I know we'll make, we'll have to get better. Hence why such questions, such remarks to me are so important for us to hear. All they do is they put us back on the right track to me. I'll give you one last example. We got an email from someone, a native Indian, I think he said,
why do you only have three languages from our tribe on your app? There's 555 of them. And I said, thank you for checking us. We need this. What you are proposing may not be doable, but what we must do is review the way we do it to see whether we can do it better on your behalf. So those comments we need to hear. I don't want to be hiding from this.
Yes. And so when we look at Ayana, if I am someone searching for, and we touched briefly why it's important to be able to find counselors that have a similar lens and worldview experience, that as much as we want to think that just having a counseling degree gives me the tools to sit with any person really is very limiting in its understanding. And it's very 25 years ago that we understand currently that when people, all people have different worldviews and lenses and experiences, and to be seen, and you've mentioned that a couple of times, to be seen for who you are, you know, outside of how you present to the world is everything in healing. And to find a counselor who mirrors your experience, and that's what Ayana means in Bengali, which is mirror, so the name is appropriate, that you're trying to find counselors who mirror the experience of the users who are contacting Ayana. So if I'm someone who is not able to find a counselor who mirrors me and I come to Ayana's site, what's the process for me?
Sure. So it's super easy and it's quite user-friendly. Our industry has developed what I call a Western-centric questionnaire, which is the tool that they use to match you with a counselor. Western-centric questionnaire means that if you are born in the States, parents are from Iran, you speak Farsi, you are caught in between both cultures, that questionnaire won't speak your language, literally or metaphorically. We've deconstructed it to be able to insert in it some rather culturally relevant items, i.e., you aren't just Latino, you are Latino from El Salvador, you aren't just Black, you're Black from the Caribbeans. Followed by, well, how important is it for you to have a counselor who's just like you? No one censors. Very important, not at all. At the end of the questionnaire, I'm able to deduce what? That you are someone who wants a counselor who's more from El Salvador, that you want them to be queer, that you want them to be Christian. That amalgamation of answers gives you a place of safety where you are being seen and heard for the first time. That's how we work. And then once you get matched with your counselor, you communicate with them immediately after by text or by video call. There's a study that I know you are aware of, but it's an acronym and it stands for YAVIS. YAVIS is an acronym that means young, attractive, verbal, intelligent, and successful. Studies were made, and most counselors abide by that. That's who they want to have on the other side, the YAVIS person. If we know that 86% of counselors are white, if you want the YAVIS, you want yourself on the other side. Speak of mirror, I mean, another epiphany, right? Mm-hmm. If you want YAVIS, you aren't speaking to the Latinos, the Asians, the Blacks, the disabled, the queer, right? You don't. And that's what Ayana is trying to undo. And we've made it easy for people to not have to go through what they've gone through while looking for counselors. And we hope that we learn from what we can do better as well, as well, we pursue our goals, yeah.
And also, when the nice thing about being the app, and this is what we're seeing with telemental health right now, is that you now are able to match people who live in rural areas or areas that aren't serviced by mental health clinicians, because we have a lack of mental health clinicians in general around the country. But then mental health clinicians of color, you know, BIPOC individuals, queer individuals, it's hard to access those counselors anywhere. So now people are able to do online or texting. You can help a young person in Alabama with a counselor who's in California, which is revolutionary.
Correct. Staying on the topic of impact, right? Whoever needs this the most is who should be spoken to the first. And with the COVID-19 laws, COVID-19 situation, the laws have been loosened up enough that you can offer counseling to someone anywhere in the US. And AYANA is meant to be about increasing access. And that's what tech does. That's what the apps is able to do. So yes, you are right about that. We've announced this week internally that we are looking at reaching 1 billion people.
How many?
1 billion.
Wow.
I'll tell you how. My publishing is already, but through AI, through learning how to reduce the cost of access to counseling. Mothers, people overseas in India, in Africa, many parts of the world, when your relatives or kids or spouses are mentally disabled, they are chained to a tree because you can't manage them. There's more shame attached to it than love to want to help them. Right? Think about that, right? So love and shame, it's relationship. If we're able to say, if there's an 85% of cell phone penetration in Africa, which it is the case, and we are able to gently expose you to what we think can help you, that won't happen again. So that's the new goal. That's the new endeavor. I can't believe I just said this to you here on the radio, but
you just made a big pledge.
Yeah, but that's the goal.
But so does that mean a couple of things? That AYANA tries to keep the cost low so that it is accessible to people, because we're not just talking about of marginalized communities, but we're talking about the socioeconomic status of people not being able to access. So I'm assuming that there's you're really paying attention to cost. And then on top of it, I want to ask two things. The other one is about stigma, and is having a platform of counselors who are themselves intersectional and multicultural, helping to reduce the stigma for people who want to seek out counseling. I'm speaking with Eric Coley. He's the founder and CEO of AYANA Therapy, AYANA, if you're interested in checking out their website. And we're talking about the accessibility of mental health for larger populations of individuals. Now, if you can remember my questions, answer them.
I do. So cost, right? You currently have, through AI-enabled machines, access to counseling. It may not be the most sophisticated type of counseling just yet, but it addresses issues of depression, anxiety. It gives you certain tools that should be made available overseas. If we are sitting on a particular piece of information that no one has access to, where you could tell me, look, I'm not just African, I'm African, Egyptian, born in the States, but I'm Christian, I'm not Muslim. And we found you, your mirror, that kind of data we can take and go overseas with and go, all right, based on 5 million people like this particular person, AI has taught us that he or she may respond to this in this particular manner. We have data. Data, thanks to the AI, can help us reduce the cost drastically from $140 to about $2 a month or a week, right? And then what you do is you go overseas and you go, look, we now have been able to, I mean, it would require, I'm sure, some funding from the government possibly. But the goal is this, and I probably should have prefaced by saying that it's a vision, but I don't believe in not pursuing something that you don't know how to do. I believe in doing it and falling on your way there. It's a vision that is being accessed to by the white community because they have so much data. And that assumption that I've just made wouldn't have sounded as shocking had I said, oh, we're going to make it available in Finland. But because I said Africa, it comes off as, oh, that's rather. And that's what I'm trying to undo, is the, why are we having such a low ceiling? Why are we dreaming with such limitations? If it's been done with the white community of counselors and tech, why not do it with Indian communities and Africans and Latinos, worldwide communities that wouldn't have otherwise have access to affordable counseling? That's what AYANA is trying to do.
And
go ahead.
Well, and it makes me think about the type of counseling, because it's one thing to have data and research and capacity to serve many, many people. But the type of counseling that we're giving to people is also so critical, Eric. I mean, you and I have talked about this, that just because we have mental health professionals doesn't mean they're providing good mental health care. And just because we have a Western standard of mental health care doesn't mean that's the best health care for people who live in Africa, or, you know, that it might not meet their cultural needs. And maybe our Western model is so pathologized and medical based that it's not really the best medical mental health treatment. So how do you, as, and now I'm kind of going another direction, but we talk about decolonizing therapy, right? How do we make sure that the kind of therapy you're wanting to spread into the world is going to be right?
It goes back to, I said this earlier, where I shed a couple of tears when I spoke this week at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. The question was asked about ethics. And I said, it goes back to the user. They dictate who we are, how we are, and how we work. The point is not to bring about some Western concepts. The point is to bring about the tools of technology and apply that based on the cultural needs and requirements that will dictate the success of Ayana. Conversely, maybe you didn't ask for the question, but what Ayana is trying to do is to reframe entirely what it meant to offer counseling to someone who was not thought about when DSM was being written. Mm-hmm. How few of us think about people that don't look like us, unless you've been around them for all your life. I'll give you one quick example. Two of my interns that are Latinos, a year or so ago, we were drafting a new marketing campaign. They only focused on Blacks and Latinos. I said, I understand the reaction to this. You are Latinos, you've been neglected, but we are forgetting other communities. Don't do to them what's been done to you. But it's natural, right, to all of us. And it's a muscle that we have to keep on exercising. To get back to your point, I'm from Africa. I'm not about to go out there and say to them, look, I have a solution. If I fought valiantly to not do the same to someone here that needs Ayana. So again, what I just discussed would be done with a strict and rigid regard to the cultural concepts of the places that they come from.
Which is so important, because that's the whole essence of Ayana, is meeting clients where they are, providing care that's appropriate for people in their world. So Eric, in our last couple minutes, how is your mental health right now, and how is doing this work to provide care for others buoying you or impacting you at this time?
My mental health is good. It's getting better. It took me 4 years to find the appropriate medication, which meant that those were 4 years of very heavy circumstances. But I find solace in that I'm so well nurtured by Ayana. It keeps me going, and it makes me so optimistic. I came up with an expression this week that I didn't know I had. I call myself a dreamer's dreamer.
Okay.
Which I don't really see ceilings. You don't say to a 5-year-old kid, kiddo, that's delusion, not a dream. But the older we get, the more we check ourselves. So the billion people that I just told you about, I'm in that. Mm-hmm. And it affects my welfare, the way I am. Of course, you got to take care of yourself. And it also, you know, in moments where I become emotional, it reminds me that I truly care about this. And again, I'm so grateful to be in this conversation, to be doing this work. And it's almost as though it's giving honor to the hard times that I faced. And I'm meant to recognize that, to see how can be of service, right? It's not about me. It's about what this experience can help us achieve.
So I imagine, again, the noise of the depression anxiety gets tamped down when you're going the right direction. But it still exists in all of us because we're human. And we never, as you mentioned earlier, we never really get to a place where we're fully healed. No one is. We're always growing. We're always coming together and falling apart, which has been kind of the theme for the last few weeks, is to be able to recognize that when we're falling apart, it's just an indication that we're starting to come back together. And you've allowed yourself to come apart, you know, multiple times in your life. And each time you come together with a bigger vision and a greater heart. And I just want to thank you so much for spending this hour with me. People who want to find out about Ayana, A-Y-A-N-A, ayanatherapy.com. Is that correct? And it's easy to follow the website, fill out the forms. If you'd like to get more information, you can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Follow us on Instagram or on Facebook. Listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. As always, I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you every Tuesday at 2. And thank you for supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
I've gotta keep the calm before the storm. I don't want less, I don't want more. Must bar the windows and the doors to keep me safe, to keep me warm. Yeah, my life. Can't reach the shore.